Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital, author of Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, or rephrasing that, the current economic collapse. And host of your show for the next hour, I am taking calls live at 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Well, we are coming up on the San Francisco Money Show, which is going to be August 7th through the 10th. So it's not this coming weekend, but the following weekend. And, you know, we've already got, I think, over 250 people signed up for our private meeting at the Money Show. And it's not advertised in the Money Show, so in order to go to the private meeting, you need to sign up in advance and contact us prior to the Money Show. But it's interesting to see the response that we're getting to these meetings now. I didn't do the San Francisco Money Show, I don't think, last year. I think I skipped it, but maybe the year before I think I did it. And I think we might have had 30 people that came to our private meeting at the Money Show. And so now we're, you know, got 10 times that amount. And so obviously the message is getting out there. More and more people are tapping into it and are interested in attending these. So if you're planning on being at the San Francisco Money Show and you don't know about this event, maybe because we didn't get your email address, we didn't send you anything, so make sure and contact Pat McDonald at our office, 800-727-7922, and let us know, because we're already trying to get a bigger room than the one that was originally assigned to us. So we kind of need to know how many people are going to there. And if you aren't already planning on attending the San Francisco Money Show, the event itself is free, and of course there's no charge for attending our meeting. So you just got to pay the cost of getting yourself to San Francisco, which is not a bad place to visit in August. It's kind of a cool climate. It's a nice city. So it's a good time to go to San Francisco anyway. And of course with me there, it's, gives you an extra reason. So anyway, it's coming up the weekend after NEST, August 7th through August 10th. You know, also if you hadn't had a chance, to watch that video that I sent out the links to everybody, from my presentation from the Mortgage Bankers Association. That's a speech that I did 2 years ago in September of 2006. It's particularly a good speech to watch because I spent a lot more time on the housing market and the mortgage market than I normally did in these types of presentations because I was talking to an audience of mortgage brokers. There was their regional convention. There were over 1,000 mortgage brokers in the room where I was speaking. So it's a great thing to watch because you can see what I told these people and in some ways their reaction to it. But a lot of people out there who try to claim that nobody could have seen this coming, nobody predicted it, you know, that's all nonsense. They didn't predict it. They didn't see it coming, but that's not the case. And I'm not the only one who saw this coming. I'm just one of the people who was very public about it. But I know there are a lot of other people that saw clearly that this was a bubble and understood why. But there probably weren't as many of them speaking out in public forums the way I was. But it's good to watch it so you can see it, and it's good to try to share that video with your friends. I mean, let people watch it. You know, send out the link, you know, on YouTube. The way you find it is you just go to YouTube, and in the search column, type in Peter Schiff Mortgage Bankers, all four words, Peter Schiff Mortgage Bankers. And when you do that, you're going to see 8 video clips will come up. You know, and you can send that link. You can cut and paste that link, you know, from the top window, that YouTube link, and you can just email it to people in your database and say, you got to watch these videos. Watch this presentation from before anybody knew there was a problem in the market. And, of course, I gave a presentation to these guys a year earlier, which was as good. And, in fact, I was part of a 4-man panel, which included some really big heavyweights in the real estate industry, national heavyweights. And that was before there was even the inkling. When I came back a year later, they acknowledged that some of the things I said a year before had already come true as far as the slowdown in the market, you know, the pickup in inventory, a pickup in foreclosure. So there was the whiff of problems in the air, but we hadn't had any of the major damage yet, or even the minor damage. But there was, you know, people were denying that there was a problem, but people in the industry could sense that it wasn't as good as it was a year earlier when I came to that same conference. I don't know if they're still having these conferences because they haven't invited me back. So I don't know if they're still going on. Maybe they don't do them anymore. I don't know, but maybe they do, and they just, you know, didn't want to bring me back just to say I told you so. But in any event, it's great to watch, and it's even better to share with other people so they can understand that this was not, you know, something that came out of left field, that somebody who was thinking clearly and not trapped in the bubble himself could obviously tell what the problem was. But anyway, I sent out that link to everybody in my database, and, you know, I can see how many people have watched it, and maybe about 6,000 people have watched all the 8 clips. So, of course, those clips went up on a lot of other websites and blogs, so I'm not really sure how many people out of the, you know, 85,000 emails we sent out, how many people actually saw it. So very few of you. So if you're listening to this, maybe, you know, a lot of the emails, of course, go into the spam filters and people never get them. But definitely make a point to watch these things. You'll really enjoy it. And try to share it with people, because my goal here, too, if we can generate a lot of views on YouTube, I think now there's, you know, one of them has 13,000 views, one of them has about 11,000 views. You know, people selectively looked at them. But I think if we can get a lot more views on there, maybe it can attract some attention on YouTube, and some people will go to watch it because it's now picking up a lot of traffic. It can be, you know, and more people will see it. And I think it's important that people understand that, hey, you know, these things are predictable. Because the bigger problem here is that all the people who are now confident that this government bailout is the solution are the very people that didn't think there was a problem in the first place. And people need to know that these solutions are actually worse than the problem. That is the reality, right? The government started this fire, and now they're trying to put it out with gasoline. And this is bigger. The president, I think, just signed today the bailout bill, which, you know, has got to be the worst legislation ever signed in the history of the United States. Because in the stroke of a pen, basically, almost the entire free market capitalist system, whatever was remaining, has been abolished, right? Basically, they are going to free up, what, $300 billion to rewrite subprime mortgages. Basically, people who went out and borrowed money to buy a house, and who knows what they borrowed money for, too. Of course, they could have bought the house, you know, and borrowed $200,000 initially, but then borrowed another $200,000 to buy cars and take vacations and put in a swimming pool, whatever they did. But if they have a mortgage, what this new plan says is, look, we're going to tear up that old mortgage and give you a brand new mortgage for, I think, 85 or 90% of the current appraised value of the house. So if you bought the house, or if your mortgage was $400,000, but the house is now worth $200,000, you're going to get a new mortgage for, what is it, $170,000. And your $400,000 mortgage is torn up. And your new mortgage is reissued for $170,000, and you don't owe anything. And you don't even owe income taxes on the amount of the debt that was forgiven. Which means whatever you bought with that couple hundred thousand dollars, you now got for free. And in many of these people, too, they might have initially bought their home with no equity at all. Maybe they bought it with nothing down. And then they refinanced two or three times as the market was going up. Now the government is basically handing them equity for free, which they never had, and wiping off all their debts. They're doing this for several hundred billion dollars in mortgages. This is just the beginning. This is the beginning of the moral hazard. Because, you know, they're bailing out these people. Look at the message that sends to people. Wait a minute. I didn't leverage up my house. I paid my mortgage. I bought a house I can afford, and now I got a fund to bail out for my neighbor. I mean, the moral hazard that we're sending to everybody is be irresponsible. Run up your debts even bigger because you're going to get your debts forgiven. I mean, this is so you can't have a capitalistic system where there's no consequences for risk, where all the risk is absorbed by the government. That destroys it. It's like a cancer. It can't live, and that's where we are right now. And I think we're down that slippery slope. It's like we just jumped off the top of the Empire State Building, and there's no turning back. We can't
climb back on the ledge. We're on the way down now. We're going to hit that pavement. And this is the beginning of these government subsidies and bailouts. And it's not going to end here. It's not going to end with real estate. It's going to go into credit card debt and car loans. Look, if people who borrowed too much money to buy houses are going to get bailed out, what about people who borrowed too much money to buy other things? People that borrowed too much money to buy cars. People that borrowed too much money to go to college. You know, why should they have to pay back their student loans? People have borrowed too much money to do anything. It's all coming. It's all coming. If it, you know, the bail, they started down this path. They're not going to change now. And of course, the mortgages, right now, Freddie and Fannie, they guarantee about half of the mortgages. Well, now that this bill has been passed, in a year or two, they're going to guarantee 70 or 80% of the mortgages. Because now that this bill is passed, Freddie and Fannie can now insure mortgages, I think, go up to like $650,000 or $700,000, whereas a couple days ago, the biggest mortgage they can insure was like $425,000. I don't know the exact numbers. So there's all these mortgages that are not guaranteed by Freddie and Fannie right now that are about to get those guarantees because now they qualify. They didn't before, and now they're able to be sold over there. So this problem is going to get much, much bigger. And the moral hazards are enormous. The losses are going to be horrific. It's the principle. It's what we've just done. The message that we're sending to Americans. And you can't have this capitalistic system. You can't have socialized losses and privatized profits because everybody has these incentives, and you destroy the whole economy. And that's what they're doing. And of course, all these bailouts are going to be paid for with the printing press. That's the only way they're going to get the money. They're not going to raise taxes. I mean, even if Barack Obama becomes president and raises some taxes on the rich, the revenue they're going to get is trivial. Trivial compared to what they're going to have to spend. So the money is going to have to come from the printing press, which just virtually guarantees the destruction of the U.S. dollar. There's no other way to fund this other than massive inflation. That's all they could do. And they basically told us that that's what they're going to do. They're going to print all the money they need to try to make sure that nobody loses dollars. And they might accomplish that. Nobody will lose any dollars. But in the process, the dollar will lose all of its value. Because that's what we can do. Right? They can make us good. They can make sure that the lenders get their dollars back. But they can't make sure that they get any purchasing power back. They have no control over the dollar's purchasing power. They can certainly supply dollars, but they can't supply them with purchasing power. And as more and more people understand this, you know, I mean, right now we've had a bounce in the markets, right? The markets have bounced. Gold is sold off. It's back down below 900. The dollar has bounced. Everybody is now optimistic that Fannie and Freddie are not going under, that more banks are not failing, because the government is saving the day. And that's the knee-jerk reaction. But once it settles in, people are going to realize that the cure is worse than the disease, that the government has no money, that there is no way they can bail it out. They're just changing the terms of the bailout. They're saying, who is going to suffer these losses? Well, is it going to be the people who made these transactions, who voluntarily made these loans? Well, they're going to suffer somewhat because they're going to get repaid now with depreciated dollars, but they're still going to get repaid something. So a lot of the losses are now going to be shifted. They're going to be shifted to people who own U.S. currency all around the world. And as people start to realize the implications of these bailouts, then this market's going to roll over, the dollar's going to roll over, the bond market's going to roll over. This is going to be a complete disaster. Hold me one second.
Stop.
Yeah, sorry, there's someone outside my office running a vacuum cleaner. I don't know if you guys can hear that, so I had to get up to shut it. But anyway, it's going to be a mess, and they're going to figure this out. So this bounce means nothing. It would have been much better, right? It would have been much better to let Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac go bankrupt. It would have been much better to allow a lot of these investment banks to go under. Now, what would that have meant? That we would already be in a more severe recession right now? You better believe it. Of course, the consequences are terrible. I'm not saying it's a picnic to let them fail. It's not. But unfortunately, letting them fail is better than propping them up with these bailouts, because the bailouts guarantee a much, much bigger problem. And not way off in the distant future. I'm not talking about 20 or 30 years into the future, but a year into the future, right? This is a huge, huge deal with the devil that Congress is making, you know, to try to get by one more election cycle without a major collapse. This guarantees that it's worse. So it's better to, you know, face reality, suck it up, and deal with it. Because when people say, but how can we let them fail because that would be so bad? Yes, I know it's bad. But you know what? The bailout is worse because the losses are real. Whether the government wants to acknowledge them, the money has been loaned out. It won't be repaid. Homes are not worth what everybody thought they were worth. So the losses are there. The government can't change that. But, of course, what the government is doing is making the losses bigger and spreading them around so that people have to suffer who weren't even involved in the transactions. And, of course, with the moral hazards that they're creating, they completely compromise the market economy that we have, or what we have left of a market economy. The incentives are crazy that they're sending out now, and it's going to lead to reckless borrowing and risk-taking on the part of everybody. Because you know what? You're a fool now if you don't go out and borrow money and spend it, because you're going to pay for the extravagance of your neighbor. What's the point of being thrifty? What's the point of doing the right thing yourself if you're going to suffer along with all the people that did the wrong thing? The moral hazard now is you've got to be irresponsible. You've got to pile on debt so that you qualify for the bailout. So you're not just there funding it. So the solution, of course, is to do the right thing to save your money, but don't save dollars. The only way to avoid this massive tax, to footing the bill, is to get out. And that's why what we're doing is the right thing. And that's why it's so fortunate that so many of our stocks have gone down. And I say this in all seriousness. You know, I know there's a lot of clients out there, and I get emails, and people are saying, hey, I sent my money to you, and I'm down 15%, I'm down 20%. We have clients that came in the last year that are down on paper because a lot of these stocks across the board have gone down. Now, there have been some that have gone up. I mean, we have a handful of stocks that have made 52-week highs in the last month, but far more have made 52-week lows. And I'm not trying to pretend that the average guy who's been with us for 6 months to a year is showing a positive return. They're not. They're very few and far between. But this is actually a fortunate situation because the world is overreacting to our problems. You know, there's liquidity. There's a credit crunch going on. People are selling stocks. Stocks are very inexpensive all around the world. And it's fortunate because we need to get out of our dollars. I mean, what's happened in the last week, these bills validate our strategy more than ever. And, you know, people who still have money in the dollar, I mean, this is, you know, you got to understand what's coming, and you got to get rid of your dollars. And it's fortunate that a lot of the stocks around the world that I think are pretty solid investments are a lot cheaper than they were 6, 12 months ago and pay much bigger dividends. So even though your dollars are less valuable than they were a year ago, they still go further in buying foreign stocks because the foreign stocks have gotten very cheap because of the way the world is reacting to our problems. But there are problems. They haven't figured that out yet. But there are problems. And if we stop borrowing and spending money, that's not the end of the global economy. That's the beginning of a better global economy where their savings belong to the world, not Americans, and where the production from the factories belong to other people, and they're not just going to be hogged by Americans. I mean, the world is looking for really a renaissance once they stop devoting all their capital and all their output to 300 million Americans. You know, this is going to be, you know, a collective sigh of relief. They just haven't figured this out. But they will. They will. It's going to come to them. But in the meantime, you know, we've got to understand what's really going on and don't look at, oh, you know, my account is down from where it was. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Plus, when you're valuing your account in dollars, who cares what it's worth in dollars? We don't know what value the dollar is going to have in a few years. It might not have any. We don't know. And so we don't want to own dollars. You have to divorce yourself. You have to understand that the dollar is destined to get destroyed. And once you understand that, then it doesn't matter what your account is worth in dollars if you know that the dollar is going to collapse. The important thing is not to have them when it does. And so you want to own real assets. You want to own assets in other countries. And it doesn't matter what some piece of paper says they're worth because that doesn't mean anything unless you're selling. And we're not selling. Most of these stocks that we bought for clients 6 months to a year ago, we're going to have them 5 years from now. And we're hopefully, you know, they'll probably be worth a lot more by then. But, you know, it doesn't matter. We're not selling them then either, most likely. But we need to ride this storm out. Because I don't even think that – I have no idea how much value the dollar is going to be able to retain over the next 4 or 5 years. I mean, it's going to be a complete mess. It's just going to be a mess. I mean, they're talking about this New Deal program to come in and stimulate the economy and create jobs. But we can't afford the old deal. How are we going to afford the New Deal? And, you know, during the original New Deal, you know, when Roosevelt came in, the federal government was tiny. It was minuscule. It was easy to expand the government because it was barely there. Hoover's last budget was about $4 billion. You know, now our budget is $3 trillion. How do you expand a $3 trillion budget? Well, we're already, I mean, the government just announced that for fiscal 2009, the budget deficit is going to be $490 billion. That's an all-time record high. And you know what? That's not even half of it. It's going to be over a trillion. I bet, and I would bet a significant amount of money, that for fiscal 2009, the national debt will grow by in excess of $1 trillion during that fiscal year. I'm sure it will. Because not, you know, a lot of stuff is off budget. You know, the cost of the Iraq war. They don't even count that in the $490 billion deficit. They're not counting anything for the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bailout. None of that is in that $490 billion. And of course, the only reason it's $490 billion is because they didn't want to estimate anything over $500 billion, because half a trillion is a bigger number. So, but still, even the $490 billion deficit. And of course, we know that doesn't include any unfunded liabilities beyond that. But so this is, you know, so how can we expand government now when it's already enormous and running huge deficits before they even embark on it? But we're about to probably send Barack Obama in there for the New Deal 2, right, when we're broke from New Deal 1. So this is a huge disaster. So don't even worry about the short-term prices. Look at it as an opportunity. Look at it. You know what? This is fantastic because I got to get more money out of the dollar. And isn't this fortuitous that a lot of these stocks are cheaper now instead of more expensive? I mean, would it be better if all the stocks had doubled and now you have to scramble and you're going to buy half the stocks? I got to get rid of my dollars and I have to pay twice as much to buy these foreign utilities or these foreign REITs or, you know, whatever it is we're buying? No. It's much better that we're getting a deal on. It's much better, you know, because we're buyers. We're not sellers. Right? High prices are important when you're a seller. They're not important when you're a buyer. Anyway, let me take a quick commercial break and we'll be back. I know I got a few calls on hold.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
You know, interesting today, some of the stories I saw in the news, there was a, you know, this game show, this complete home makeover. And what they do is they, you know, they basically find some deserving person and make them a house for free, even from scratch. They find all kinds of people to chip in, and they build a house, a dream home for this deserving individual. And they give it to them for free, no mortgage. And they even give them enough cash to pay the property taxes for 20 years or so. Well, apparently, one of those homes is now in foreclosure because the individual who got it immediately borrowed money against it. Now he can't afford to pay the bills, and the home is in foreclosure. Which it shows, I mean, even people who get homes for free, get homes for nothing, you know, they're in foreclosure now. I mean, look, this is how people treat homes. They're just ATM machines. You get a house for nothing, and the next thing you know, you can't even handle the mortgage. I mean, this person should have been set for life with a free house. No rent, no mortgage, no property taxes. Yet could not resist the temptation to borrow against it, and now he's broke. And also another interest, you know, along the lines that I've been talking about was that this restaurant, Bennigan's, which is a chain restaurant with a couple hundred restaurants over the country, filed Chapter 7 bankruptcy pretty much overnight. And, you know, another victim of the recession, which the politicians claim isn't even here. But this is something that is going to be repeated throughout the economy over the next several years, because we simply have built up a service sector economy that is not supportable by the true wealth and purchasing power of the American citizens. They simply cannot afford all these services. They really couldn't afford them in the past, but we were able to borrow the money to pay for them. But what's happening now is the bills are catching up with us. The people who were lending us the money are contracting. That's the credit crunch. It's because the lenders don't want to lend. Well, why don't they want to lend? Because we broke. we can't pay them back. And the government is trying to figure out, you know, well, what can we do? What can we do to solve the credit crunch? Well, you can't solve the credit crunch because there's no more credit. People don't want to lend us money, right? That's the problem. We can't afford to pay back the money we already borrowed. How do we expect people to extend us any more credit? That is the problem. I mean, saying, we need to ratchet down our lifestyles, and we need to start paying back the money we've already borrowed, rather than trying to figure out how we can get, you know, more credit. So as people, you know, make do with this new reality, they're going to spend less money at restaurants. You know, they're going to spend much money. Starbucks earnings came out today. They were terrible. I mean, they actually lost money, you know, and so the stock was down pretty big after hours. But people are cutting back. You know, they built all these Starbucks restaurants because Americans were fat with all this home equity, and they splurged some of it on these mochaccinos. But now, you know, they're cutting back, and people are realizing that, you know, $5 for a cup of coffee is just not something that they really need to do. They can get a cheaper coffee at McDonald's, or they can make it themselves, or just not drink as many coffees. And this is going to happen across the landscape. I mean, it's going to happen with all retailers. It's going to happen throughout all the malls. These companies are going to be shutting down because they just don't have a market anymore. The same thing with the airlines. You know, I finally saw a discussion today on CNBC where they're referencing a conversation with the CEOs of one of the airlines, and the CEO said that, air travel is now going to be for the rich. We're going to have to continue to cut back on the number of planes. We're going to raise the fares, and it's going to be for the rich. You know, I said this years ago, and I said it on TV when it first started happening, too, not too long ago, and people didn't necessarily believe me, but now they believe me. You know, I mean, they don't necessarily believe me, but now they're hearing it from people inside the industry, and, of course, they're believing them, they're believing them, but they're not believing, they didn't believe me when I said it, but now finally, you know, they're hearing it right from the industry itself. But again, all of this is a reflection of our falling standard of living, and we have to unwind the malinvestments. We have to unwind, all the retailers. All the shopping centers, all the malls, and that we really can't afford. You know, and so as these industries cut back, you're going to get all the layoffs, and we're going to see all the bankruptcies because we just have too many. We have too much capacity in retailing, in services. When you have a population that really can't afford these services unless they can borrow additional money, which they can no longer do. They don't have the home equity to securitize it. The lenders are getting wise. They don't want to lend. And, of course, all the government can do is try to create new credit out of thin air by printing it. But that's just pure inflation. All that's going to do is make goods and services more expensive. It's not going to make them more affordable. It's just going to make them more expensive. Anyway, they're telling me that the problem potentially is fixed. And so I guess let me see, is Remen there from D.C.?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Fantastic. Well, first of all, I have seen that YouTube presentation with the bankers. I think it's phenomenal. I think it should be taught in the business schools. So I really, really enjoyed watching that. I have two quick questions for you. First of all, I had a few houses. In 2004, I sold all of them, so I'm so happy that I did that. And people were laughing at me then. But I'm so glad that I saw the bubble and I cashed out. And
in fact, according to the Case-Shiller numbers that came out this week, real estate prices nationwide are now back down to the prices of 2004. So any appreciation that people thought might have occurred over the preceding 4 years has now been wiped out. And the thing is, we're just getting started. Now we're going to wipe out the appreciation of the 4 years from 2000 to 2004.
I agree.
And all those phony gains are just going to be eliminated. Even with these government bailouts, which are designed to try to prop up home prices. You know, one of those economists is out there again, you know, trying to say the government should buy up all these houses and then just bulldoze them. You know, and get rid of them. It's like, you know, it's crazy because we have home builders still building homes. I guess it would make more sense, you know, we pay farmers not to grow food. Why don't we pay the home builders to stop building homes? That would at least make more sense than destroying the homes that already exist.
Right.
Of course, I wouldn't advocate either one. I would hope that the home builders would wise up and stop building homes already on their own.
Yeah.
Without being paid to do it.
Right. And the thing that bothers me is that, as you're saying, this housing bill, they doubled the national debt in a matter of one weekend, and the main media is not talking about it. And that's very, very...
It only doubles the national debt to the extent that the mortgages are worth zero. Now, we know they're not worth zero. I mean, the homes have some value. There is some collateral there. But my guesstimate would be that the likely losses are at least a trillion. So I would say we at least added a trillion to the national debt, but we exposed it to a much greater loss in the future. Because as I said, right now Fannie and Freddie guarantee, you know, half the mortgages. In a year or two, they'll guarantee 80% of the mortgages. So now maybe the expected loss won't be 1 trillion, but 2 trillion. But it's also, you know, this is Freddie and Fannie. What about the rest of it? You know, what about all the other, you know, government guarantees that are implicit, that are not explicit, that might change? And, you know, what are they going to do, as I said, with the credit card debt and the auto loans and the student loans? You know, there's a whole bunch of things that, you know, bailouts that are coming. And, of course, the FDIC, you know, you're going to have a lot of bank failures. You know, what's the government going to do when the FDIC runs out of money? And, of course, you know, the FDIC doesn't even have any money. When we talk about the money the FDIC has, it doesn't have any money right now. All that money is in government bonds. So every time the FDIC needs to bail out a bank, they have to sell government bonds. So, I mean, this whole thing is a farce. They have no money even now.
And not many people know that there's a clause for 99 years. FDIC has up to 99 years to pay your money. So after the 10th bank, so the ones that they have run out of business, IDMAX customers are lucky ones because they're going to get something. I think...
You know, the government's not going to enforce that. They're not going to tell the voters they're going to have to wait 99 years. They're going to print up the money and give it to them.
That's true. Now my question for you, number one, is that I have a very good exposure to precious metal, physical precious metal. And besides precious metal and foreign stocks, if you have to pick one other thing, what would you pick as investment these days? That's my question number one. Question number two is that I have paid for the current residence of mine, but I'd like to get a cash out loan on it and invest that, because I think this is the best opportunity to cash that out and, you know, invest it. Do you think that's a good idea or not?
I mentioned that in my book. You know, it's something you need to consider the risks. But, yeah, I mean, if I owned any residential real estate, which I do not, I would try to borrow as much money as anybody was willing to lend me in U.S. dollars against that real estate, take advantage of the fact that you can get a 30-year fixed-rate loan right now in dollars for under 6% in some cases. The dollar is going to lose way more than 6% of its value a year as far as I'm concerned. So I'd rather borrow that money and utilize it to accumulate assets outside the country that in a few years I'd never be able to afford with those dollars. You know, so I would do it, and I would buy, you know, in answer to your first question, what else should you buy other than precious metals? Basically, I'd buy precious metals and precious metal stocks. And then the money that isn't in gold and gold stocks is in, you know, non-mining foreign stocks that pay dividends, whether they're commodity-related, being in oil and gas or agriculture, or just basic businesses, infrastructure, commercial real estate, utilities, companies like that. I want to own real assets around the world. I want to own assets in countries that are going to experience an increase in wealth relative to the United States, because assets outside the United States are going to appreciate sharply relative to assets in the United States, if my outlook is right.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let me skip to Peter in Alabama.
Hey, Peter.
Hey, Peter.
I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I wanted to thank you for saving me and my dad about $700,000 getting into some condos back about a year and a half ago. And
did you call me up and I talked you out of it?
Well, just listening to your radio program and all, you really hammered it, and we stayed away, and I really appreciate you for that.
Yeah, good. At least I was able to keep you from, you know, jumping off that cliff.
I appreciate it. We've been working with a broker, and I was just wondering what your thoughts as far as short and long term, you know, with the government coming in and shaking up markets all over the world, what you thought about simply being in the winning bonds, foreign bonds, as far as, I know you're in conservative, like Australia, Switzerland, but what about you know, the Icelandic bonds, Russia bonds, Chinese bonds.
Yeah, you know, a lot of those bonds, you know, they have pretty high yields, and apparently, I guess there's more risk there. I mean, generally when I buy bonds, I think that if we're buying bonds, we should be ultra-conservative. That's why we're buying bonds. If we want to be speculative, instead of buying speculative bonds, let's just buy more conservative stocks. And let's take the appreciation of the stocks. I mean, generally, when I want to buy bond money, I just want to buy something that is very, very safe. When you go and buy high-risk bonds, I think there's more upside by buying stocks, personally. So I like to buy the bonds in, like, Singapore or Switzerland or the premier currencies that have lower yields. And with my money where I'm willing to take more short-term volatility, I'd rather get that high dividend not from the bond coupon but from a stock, because there are plenty of stocks we're buying now that are paying high single-digit or double-digit yields, and I'd rather do that. I think there's more upside there than in a bond. You know, if you buy a bond and you buy it at, you know, even, you know, let's say you buy it at 90% or 80% of face, the most you're going to do is get face value. Now, whereas you can buy a stock and it could triple, quadruple, go up 10 times, you know.
Right. You know, me and my dad have been in the hosiery business and all our lives, and, you know, we got screwed by the government as far as free trade, and, you know, it's just scary buying you know, equity plays and stocks and all with our government out there trying to sell our, you know, screwed up mess here in the U.S. And it's just,
that's why we're steering. One of the reasons we're steering clear of U.S. equities, you know, by and large, I own a few myself, but, you know, I prefer the foreign stocks, the domestic stocks in pretty much any industry or any sector, because I just don't trust the U.S. government. I mean, people try to make a big deal about country risk, about, oh, you invest abroad and there's all this political risk. This political risk here, I mean, we've already demonstrated that. I mean, if there's a country that's going to slap a windfall profit tax on a company, it's us. You know, and if a country is going to tax or regulate away your profits, it's likely to be the United States. We've already shown that we're willing to do that. And so I think there's a lot of risk to being invested in U.S. stocks.
But as far as Icelandic, Russian bonds that pay high yields, do you have any?
Look, you could do that for the currency play, but as I said, I'd rather, you know, you might want to buy some stocks that have high yields because you generally have more upside. That's my only thought. I mean,
they pay a monthly dividend, basically.
Well, the bonds don't pay monthly dividends, but they'll pay a dividend. I'm usually semi-annually, but anyway. But look, I'm not against it. You can put a portion of your portfolio into emerging market debt. You know.
You know, they pay 12% or more as far as like Icelandic or.
Yeah, I know that. I know. You can get some high yields, but, you know, there's a reason for that, you know.
Trust them.
But anyway.
I think they're going to default.
Thanks for the call. I know I got a lot of people on hold, so I don't want to take too much time. The next caller is, Brandon in California.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I'm currently a student and I'm graduating and I've got a job lined up, and I'm in the unfortunate situation where I'm in that rent buy, quandary, and now, of course, I'd always been with your rental is better thesis, because if you look at the cost of homeownership, the mortgage payment, and depreciation of the house, the rental wins hands down. But the market I'm going to actually looks like it's already dropped, I don't know, 25% over the past year or so, and it looks like the mortgage payments are actually on par with what an equivalent rent payment. And I'm thinking, as long as the government's willing to throw money at me, and I can make a small down payment, although I've already got all my whatever assets I have out of the dollar, I could, you know, pull some of that out and put it in a down payment. But I was wondering if this current moral hazard that's been created by this new bill has changed your rental versus buy thesis at all in these markets.
Well, look, I mean, if you can buy with zero down, all right, and you can get a payment that is lower than what your rent would be, then obviously you can do it. I mean, worst case scenario is you damage your credit rating when you walk away from the property. But if they require a 10 or 20% down payment, I think you're better off putting that down payment in something good outside the U.S. and just rent. I don't think there's any immediate risk of a big real estate price appreciation. And of course, you know, when you're moving, you're getting a new job, you're moving into a new city.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm moving to where I grew up from, but from school, from back there.
But the thing is, you don't know how the job's going to work out. You might want to leave in 3 or 6 months. I mean, you might not like it. The minute you buy a house, you almost tie yourself down. I mean, let's say you start that job, you don't like it, you get an interview, you find a better job in another state. You know, you want to be flexible. You want to be unencumbered until you really know where you want to be, until you really settle down. I mean, I don't think it makes sense from an economic point of view for a single person in their 20s to buy anything.
Single, but yes.
You know, you don't know where you're going to end up. You don't know how your life is going to change. You want to be flexible. You want to be able to take the opportunities as they come. You know, you don't want to be tied down. You don't want to be stuck to a house when there's no reason, or a condo. There's no reason for you to buy one. When you get, when you're set in your career, when you're married, you're going to raise kids, you want to plant roots in a community, and you want to buy something, then that's a different story. But you don't know where you're going to be. You don't know what's going to happen. It just doesn't make any sense. If you're just saying, look, I just want to go deep into debt because the government's going to wipe my debt away and I'll own some house for free. Thing is, houses are going to be so cheap, it's not even going to be that big a deal. But I mean, you know, but if you could do it with zero down, you know, I mean, you know, maybe you could do it. But, you know, even that's no guarantee, because, you know, it still could create problems and headaches. You know, there's other headaches when you're a landlord. It's a lot easier to be a renter.
Of course, but I was also comparing that to the probability of much higher interest rates when I'm ready to, you know, actually buy a house and want.
There will be much higher interest rates, but there'll be much lower prices. See, that's the trade-off. People forget, gee, I don't want to have to buy with a 9 or 10% mortgage. Why not? Because you'll be borrowing a lot less money. So your actual home payment won't be higher. Yes, you'll be paying more in interest, but you'll have a lower loan balance that you're financing. And if you invest your down payment money now wisely, you might be able to buy an entire house with just the down payment money, and it won't matter how high the mortgage rates are, because you won't even be taking on a mortgage. You'll be buying your house for cash. And of course, if the tax code is the way it is, if you're paying higher interest, then you're getting a better write-off, which is better. You know, the more of your monthly payment is interest, the bigger your tax deduction. So it's better to buy a less expensive house with a high interest rate than a more expensive house with a low interest rate. And of course, you can always refinance. So let's say your interest rates go up to 10 or 12% and it crushes the housing market, and you buy one of these cheap houses, but you have expensive mortgage. In a few years, if the rates come down, you refinance. You know, and now you've got a cheap house and a low mortgage.
So you don't think the government really has any ammo to keep these real estate prices as they are by encouraging these moral hazards?
Real estate prices are going to go down no matter what. The only way they're not going to go down is through hyperinflation. And if you have hyperinflation, then, you know, you'll be much better off having that down payment money in gold or some foreign asset, because it'll go up a lot more than that house.
That's where it is now. I think I'll keep it.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Let's take one more quick break, and we'll be back for the last calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. I would say no more calls. Let's just take the calls that are online. Who is next? Is it Nick from Utah?
Yep, that's right. Hey, Peter, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. I just have a quick question about the foreign exchange and inflation, and how the impact of our inflation is going to finally be realized. Because it kind of seems like we're at the mercy of whatever the perception of our dollar is in the foreign markets. And so I just maybe wanted some clarification or insights from you as to how that process happens.
Well, no. I mean, basically, eventually, what happens is the world doesn't want to buy our debt anymore, and they don't want to, you know, prop up our dollar. I mean, you know, and then the whole thing falls apart. I mean, we can only borrow money as long as there are willing lenders, and if the only willing lender is the Federal Reserve, then the dollar collapses. I mean, right now we still have foreign central banks and foreign money moving into our bond markets and our, you know, government markets into Fannie and Freddie, and basically Fannie and Freddie made debt now, for all intent and purpose, is now treasuries. There is now no difference between buying a mortgage-backed security guaranteed by Freddie or Fannie or buying U.S. treasuries. They're now basically all direct obligations of the federal government. And so, but if nobody wants to buy them, then it, the only buyer is the Fed, and they can only do it by printing money, and then you have hyperinflation. And, you know, that's coming. That's coming, you know.
Well, and it just seems, you know, based on what's happened in the past, it seems like the things the government's doing right now are much bigger in scale than anything that's happened in the past in our country. And so I'm just wondering if there's any sort of time scale for when things like this have happened in the past, how fast that impacted us as consumers here in the States. So
I hear you. I hear you. What is happening now is unprecedented, I think. I think this is a chapter in history that we're looking at that is going to be very significant ultimately when they write, you know, the rise and fall of the United States. But this is a significant thing that is being glossed over by the media, by Congress. This is a giant, giant mistake that we've made, and it is going to lead to financial ruin. This is not trivial, and this is not me overreacting. This is me saying this is a horrendous, horrific mistake that we've made, and the consequences of what we've done are far worse than the bubbles themselves. You know, this is, you know, what the government did in blowing up the real estate bubble was terrible. You know, we should have suffered the consequences of the bursting of the dot-com bubble that they inflated.
Right.
But the price for pushing off that recession was this gigantic housing bubble and all the debt associated with it. What they're doing now to postpone this recession or to, you know, to ease the pain of this recession is even worse. And the consequences are going to be even more disastrous for our entire economy. And when they write the history books about the rise and fall, and when they want to pinpoint what was the event that really sealed the fate of our country, what is it that really led to this this massive, massive economic disaster, they're going to point to the passage of this bill. I mean, you know, and maybe they'll also point to the bailouts, if the Fed, you know, bailing out, you know, the Bear Stearns transaction with J.P. Morgan or that. But this is probably even more significant. But there's a couple of series of events that ultimately are going to lead to the demise of this economy. And when people write the history, these are going to be the seminal events. And it's amazing that as they're taking place, there's very little objection.
Yeah.
Very few people out there can see how bad this is. And, of course, the people who fail to see it are the very people who assured us that there was no problem to begin with.
Well, yeah, now it's sheer glorification on their part as to the solution that they magically came up with overnight. So,
remember, Paulson, Henry Paulson, who is, you know, the cheerleader for all this, he's the very guy that assured us that the subprime problems were contained, right?
Yeah.
So that's the guy we're supposed to listen to. He's the guy that understands this. He's the know-it-all. He's the one that we should all bow down to his expertise and judgment. This is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Anyway, thanks for the call. I got about 10 more minutes and 2 more callers.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Let me go to Aaron from British Columbia.
Yeah, hey, Peter.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you know, with the collapse of a U.S. dollar coming or a huge slide, isn't that going to, you know, make people lose confidence in all fiat currencies around the world?
It might. You know, that's one of the reasons that I am so interested in buying foreign equities and accepting the excess volatility, because I don't want to own anybody's fiat currency, really, because there's really no difference between the dollar and the euro or the dollar and the yen when it comes down to the fundamentals. They're all the same as the Zimbabwe dollar. It's just a piece of paper that governments print. And the only thing that gives it value, theoretically, is the government's willingness to not print it, you know, in excess. And obviously, America has said, we're not going to do that. We're going to print the hell out of them. And so we know the dollar is doomed, but, you know, how do we know that something similar won't one day happen to any of these other fiat currencies? So I like to own real things. And you might say, well, then why not just buy real things in America? Well, I know for sure that as America becomes poorer, which is what's going to happen, we've blown our wealth, our industrial infrastructure is dissipated, we don't have savings, I know that our share of GDP is going to shrink dramatically relative to the rest of the world, and that means assets in this country, whether they're real estate assets or utilities or whatever they are, those assets are going to lose value relative to assets every place else. That's what I feel has got to happen no matter what. So I want to own real stuff. But I want to own real stuff in other countries. So even if all the currencies get wiped out and they're replaced with brand new currencies, I know
that if I own real estate in Europe, it's got to be worth more than real estate in America, because the Europeans, who are my potential tenants, are going to have more purchasing power to pay me rent than the American tenants. And that goes with any asset. Just like, you know, you look at any poor country, you know, assets in poor countries are worth more than, they're worth less than similar assets in rich countries. But the difference is you've got a richer population in one country that can, you can rent the asset to, or that can, you know, buy the services or patronize your business. So I want to own my assets abroad. I mean, that's just, it's just hands down seems like the thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And, how is one country going to divest from the U.S. dollar without kind of getting blackballed by
the world? I don't know. Look, they're doing it. A little few countries have moved away. Look, Kuwait did it. It was in Syria. They depegged from the dollar. You know, smaller countries are going to do it. Eventually, it's going to be a rush. I mean, people are going to realize, hey, I better do it. I better get rid of my dollars. You know, I don't want to be the last one out before they're worthless. You know, the problem is for the big holders like China and Japan, you know, they can't get out because, you know, they crushed the market. So they're just going to have to take their lumps. You know, right now, you know, they're throwing good money after bad, but eventually they're going to have to come to the realization that they're going to lose, that the money they have in dollars is lost. And what's the best way to deal with and manage those losses? Right now, there's just a compounding problem, right? The more money they lend us, the more money they're going to lose. And the minute they figure this out for sure and decide that, you know what, we're not doing it anymore. And what we just did, you know, by guaranteeing all these debts, again, the initial reaction is, okay, Fannie and Freddie are not defaulting. All right, they're not defaulting, but so what? Because the money they're going to pay you back is going to have very little value. So what's the difference? Mm-hmm. Now, when the world realizes, you know, we talked today on Fox about, you know, will the U.S. lose its AAA credit rating? It doesn't matter. U.S. is in a AAA credit rating anyway. I mean, look at how much money has been lost in U.S. government bonds over the last 5 or 6 years. How can we pretend that our bonds are AAA? They're junk. Because there's no way that anybody who lends us money is going to get paid back in real money. The best case scenario is they get paid back in inflated dollars. And the government's already said that. And so this is likely to hammer it home. People are going to realize how big this problem is, and it's going to get worse. And wait till we post the $1 trillion deficit. It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Last call today. We're back to Peter from Massachusetts.
Hi, Peter. I want to congratulate you on your predictions. You're a true patriot. I have some questions about Obama. It seems like he's really tied to Volcker. This weekend he had a meeting with him. Is it possible that once Obama gets into office, can he kick out Bernanke and institute Volcker right away? And wouldn't that be contrary to your predictions about hyper?
Oh, I think it's just for show. I don't think Volcker is going to have any influence in the Obama administration. I don't think he's have any influence on Obama's thinking right now. I don't think you're going to see any speeches where Obama says we need sacrifice, we need higher interest rates, we need bankruptcies. He's not going to say that. I think that he's just trying to put together a team of impressive individuals just for show, just for photo ops. I don't think he's really paying attention to anything that anybody is saying. I mean, he's just going to do what he wants to do. This is all the political game. And, when he gets in, you know, he does not have the stomach for Volcker, and neither does the country. I mean, you know, and now that they've put the Fannie and Freddie on the hook for all these mortgages, the last thing they want to do is raise interest rates dramatically, because that will put more and more of these mortgages into default, which the federal government is now on the hook for, which they weren't on the hook for before. So it's even less likely that they're going to do a Volcker-type thing now that the government has already made explicit these Fannie and Freddie Mae bailouts, because that means even more losses for the government when more of these mortgages go into default, which is what will happen if we get substantial increases in interest rates. So there isn't a prayer. This is just politics. I would love it if we could get a Volcker back. But even if we got him, it wouldn't. You know, it's like he doesn't have the tools that he had back then. What could he do? We're screwed. You know, the problem. You know, people say, how do we fix this problem? It's unfixable. The problem was we spent the money in the first place. We borrowed it. I mean, if I had a time machine, maybe I could fix the problem. But without a time machine, all we're doing is suffering the consequences of the problem. The problem has already happened. Now, the bigger issue is, how do we keep the problem from getting worse?
You know,
right.
And what can we do to allow the free market to gradually, you know, rebuild a viable economy and overcome the problem? That's what we should be doing. But of course, everything we're doing now simply makes the problem worse and makes them maybe unsurmountable. So that instead of just, you know, a severe injury that we can one day recover from, we die.
So
the economy is killed.
Yeah. So when are interest rates going to rise? I mean, is it?
Oh no.
Below?
I don't know when they're going to rise.
I'm sorry?
Point to.
You think they're going to rise?
Actually, you know what? Eventually they might never rise. You remember, because if the Federal Reserve simply buys all the bonds that anyone wants to sell, then interest rates will stay low. But it won't matter because nobody in the private sector will be lending money, and nobody will even want the money that the government is transacting in because prices will be rising so fast that the government paper will be worthless.
Okay.
So if the government's not going to let the market set interest rates, then, you know, there's going to be no interest rate because nobody's going to lend at the government's artificial rate. So it's all going to be the government because the government doesn't care how much it loses.
So how can mortgage rates keep rising then? Like how?
But they're rising now because they're rising because people don't want to lend because it's too risky. But as far as the government guarantees, now it's going to be possible, but it's going to be up to Freddie and Fannie now to set standards because nobody else is going to set a standard because whatever mortgages you can sell to Freddie and Fannie, you don't give a damn if they get paid back because you're going to get the Fed's guarantee. But now it's up to Freddie and Fannie to have standards or to set the standards. And I'm afraid that their recent efforts to tighten up on lending standards are going to reverse, and they're going to loosen them up again because they're going to try to prop up home prices because people can't afford to pay these prices, with a real lending standards.
So do you think this $300 billion bailout is going to help the housing market?
No. The housing market is still going down, but it is going to help somewhat. People sell houses now. They're going to be able to get higher prices for those homes than they otherwise would have got. But it simply means that people who are buying those homes are going to be overpaying for them. But the losses are still going to be there, and prices are still going to fall. They might end up falling a little bit slower because of this, but ultimately interest rates are going to rise a lot higher than they would have. And so because of the government bailout, real home prices are going to lose more value than if they hadn't bailed them out. You know, it's real, meaning home prices adjusted for inflation.
Right. Now,
anyway, we got to hop, so thanks for the call. I'm just running out of time here. But I appreciate your call. Anyway, we just got about a minute or two left, and again, you know, apologize for some of the technical mishaps we had during this show. I don't know really what was the cause of it, but hopefully they can identify it and try not to repeat them again. But anyway, remember, for those of you who are going to be coming to San Francisco, I'll see you on the 8th to the 10th up in San Francisco for the Money Show. Don't forget, again, to watch that video on YouTube, Peter Schiff, Mortgage Bankers. And if you haven't already read Crash Proof, make sure and get yourself a copy and read it before the next book comes out, which is still scheduled for release October 13th. You can already order your copies now. I see them up for sale on Amazon. The book is Bull Moves, the Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets, How to Keep Your Portfolio Up When the Market is Down. Anyway, that's it. Remember to call or speak to a broker to establish your account or add to an existing account. 800-727-7922. I know we have brokers in offices now in 6 states or 5 states ready to help you. 800-727-7922. That's it for now. I'll be here again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. And remember, www.europac.net. So long.